On this week's episode of the Fanboy Garage, we complete our discussion on Star Wars by unpacking our thoughts on Solo: A Star Wars Story. Can two hardcore Star Wars fans, who have pretty much agreed on everything to this point, completely disagree on Solo? Find out as we open the garage and unpack episode 4. And welcome to another edition of the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined, as always, by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Hello to you in my horrible Christopher Walken impersonation. What's up, guys? What's going on? How you doing?
So what is going on? So in episode 3, we spoke a lot about this current state of Star Wars fandom and the franchise kind of in this post-Solo world that we now live in. But one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about was our like deep spoiler-filled thoughts on the movie itself. So right. We're going to continue the conversation, at least to a point, with our, you know, really digging into the movie itself and then see where that goes. So, you know, I know we had very different feelings about the movie. Just talking about it. And that's, I think, a first, because I'm pretty sure that, I mean, we've never gone like through every movie, but I'm pretty sure that we agree more often than not when it comes to the Star Wars movies. Right. And we both, just for the record, we both love The Last Jedi. So we're both on board with that. So right. This is going to be kind of a different thing, because it's weird to see two people who are both big time Star Wars fans who both love The Last Jedi, but now have very different opinions on Solo. So let's dive in and start talking about the movie itself.
Yeah. And I know we've been hyping this episode a lot because of the disagreement in terms of, you know, how both of us feel about the movie. And I think actually your feelings might be in the minority, because it seems that lots of folks really are coming out of Solo with a positive reaction. So I will give you the floor, sir, to start first in terms of where you're coming from and your feelings on the movie. I know when we did episode 3, there were, you know, you kind of hinted at some of your distaste for the film, but the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, so, you know, I do agree, before I start talking a little bit about my thoughts, that I do consider myself in the minority as far as the people who have seen the movie. I do know one person, and I don't know his name, and I don't know who he is, but the only other person that I know that actually had an opinion similar to mine on the movie was somebody that I overheard in a restaurant last week talking about it with a group of guys. They're like, hey, did anybody see Solo? And he's like, I did. I didn't like it. I thought it's, mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, oh, wow, so there's like the other guy that went to see it and didn't like it. So I do know there are some people out there that weren't crazy about it. I think what this really comes down to is people who have seen it, for the most part, like it. And then there's just a lot of people that haven't seen it. And we don't know what their thoughts obviously would be at the end of the day. Yeah. So, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, you know, have you seen Solo? And I said, I did. And they said, did you like it? I said, I didn't. And they were like, well, you're not the only one. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I said, most of what I'm seeing is fairly positive. But
right.
Now the poor box office performance is sort of taking on this life of its own. And it's, I think, causing people to think that in general, this is one of these movies that it's like, you know, nobody's liking. And that's definitely that's definitely not been the case, at least in the experiences that I've seen with people on Twitter and the couple of people that I do know that I've seen it, that I've spoken to. But for me, going into this movie, I did not have very high expectations for it. But I felt that the movie, and I think my quote was, it was disposable entertainment with a heavy emphasis on the disposable and not enough emphasis on the entertainment for my tastes. So what I found with the movie was I found that it just happens. Like, there wasn't very many things that made a big impact with me. Mm-hmm. You know, just putting technical stuff aside for a second, I just felt like the movie sort of came and went. There wasn't anything that I really was sinking my teeth into. In fact, the opening sequence of the movie, I couldn't help but think that it actually felt to me more like an episode of Farscape than a Star Wars movie, which is not necessarily a bad thing because I love Farscape, but it's not quite the vibe that I expect when I go in. So that was really what threw me, I think, in the very beginning. And one of our listeners, JRB, he put up a really great series of tweets, kind of in response to episode 3, some of the things that he disagreed with that we were speaking about. And when I was reading it, it kind of had an impact on me because I was seeing all of these things that he was listening was for reasons why he loved Solo. And it was like, he had always these were his favorite characters, and he had always wanted to see like Han meet Chewie, and he had always wanted to see like Han get the Falcon and all of that stuff. And I realized, I was like, there's the breakdown. Was the complete opposite right there. Like, I have never in all of my time in Star Wars fandom ever said, wow, I really want to see the first time that Han met Chewie. Or, I really cannot wait to see Han get the Falcon, like, you know, from Lando. Because, like, all of this time, I was told that, you know, Han won the Falcon in a card game. And here's the movie, and Han won the Falcon in a card game. Like, it wasn't really much more than that. It was basically a literal sort of visual version of that story that I had heard all this time. And, you know, Han meeting Chewie and Han and seeing the Falcon for the first time, like, that stuff didn't really have the impact with me that I think it had with a lot of other people.
Right.
So right off the bat, that's a very big part of this movie, right? A big part of the charm of this film for a lot of people were those elements, that nostalgia. And so taking that away, and since that didn't have an impact on me, now like imagine now I'm sitting there watching this movie kind of flat, you know, and I wasn't the only one.
There were like no surprises, right? So it's literally some boxes that need to be checked. They obviously check those boxes and you're like, yeah, this is no surprise to me. Like, obviously this is how it has to go down. And so everything else that sort of hits those main plot points is just filler to you. Is that kind of like how it feels?
I do agree. It was very much to me checking the boxes. That's why, like in the last episode, when you asked me about like fan service versus nostalgia, and I was like, you know, like with Rogue One, there were moments of fan service, but it was kind of just things that were placed that didn't necessarily have a big impact on the plot in some cases. But I thought like in Solo, the two things were sort of intertwined and like just too much of that checking off the box, some of it being very on the nose, like Han getting his last name.
Right.
I kind of cringed a little bit like at that scene because I was like, really? You know, and then like Han getting the dice, like I felt like that was so I think supposed to be this big emotional moment. And for me, it almost seemed like a throwaway moment. It was like, oh, that's
when he gets it back from Kira.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, I didn't even, you know, for me, I didn't even react to that.
But I think that was set up to sort of be like a kind of a powerful moment. And it just kind of I didn't think it was like it sort of fell flat for me.
Right. All right. I mean, I didn't take it that way.
Yeah. And then, or even for instance, like Han meeting Chewie for the first time. I mean, that was fine and I get where they were going, but I thought that scene was almost kind of rushed. And I'm, you know, trying to really think back now. There were so many little boxes that they checked off. Oh, and the most egregious one to me, which maybe it wasn't really that egregious, but it was very on the nose. So in the sense of being on the nose, I thought it was the most egregious thing was Han shooting first.
Oh, come on though. I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, so I'm sitting there.
I get what you're saying, but they had to do that.
Did they though? Cause technically now in canon, that's not part of it. So that was sort of a nod to like, I think a nod to a lot of people who haven't gone to see the movie, ironically.
I bet that a lot of people enjoy that. I think that's probably one of the things that people that are diehard Star Wars fans that feel George Lucas kind of took that bit off the rails and it's been course corrected in a way.
I guess. I mean, I guess it depends on how you
wink, like he was always meant to shoot first. This is the kind of guy he is. He doesn't pull that crap with the weird head bob.
Right. So for me, and I think this is my biggest issue, is that I feel like I'm evolving as a Star Wars fan. In a sense, okay. Like I'm realizing this about myself, like because I'm thinking about it, like with The Force Awakens, my favorite part of The Force Awakens was the new characters, not the nostalgia. You know, the nostalgia was nice, but I really enjoyed the new characters for that. And with The Last Jedi, I loved it because it took Star Wars to new places,
right.
Both with its themes and with its characters. And even Rogue One as a prequel, considering the fact that it was mostly new, unfamiliar characters, I mean, in a way, that also kind of took Star Wars to some new places as well, especially by the standards of a prequel. So now here you have Solo, which is not really taking you to new places at all. It's very much about checking off boxes, giving you little cute visual moments, kind of trying to wrap its arms around you and make you feel all like fuzzy and comfy, especially, you know, like how... Like we were talking about with the Han shoots first moment, like that was clearly tailored for a very specific
segment of the
fan base. Yeah. So I'm sitting there and just looking at it and saying, oh, okay, there's another box that was checked. Oh, there's another box that was checked. So while most people probably just sat there and picked out and had fun with those moments, I just, for whatever reason, it didn't resonate with me because I just don't think that that was the movie that I was ready for at the time. Right. And I knew that. I think I kind of knew that going in, but I expected to go into Solo and have fun with it. Like, I figured, well, it's going to be flawed, probably, because that's what everyone's saying, but I'm sure it'll be fun and whatever. And I think I missed out on the fun factor. And you know, again, maybe when I see it again, because I haven't seen it since that moment. You know, the theater that I saw it in was flat. Like, nobody was reacting to anything. Nobody laughed at anything. Nobody kind of cheered. It was very different than your typical Star Wars experience.
When did you see it?
I saw it the weekend, Sunday of opening weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
And also, you know, there was that issue which has now come out, which when I first saw it, I kind of thought it was an issue with my theater. So I didn't really talk much about it. But now I'm reading articles where apparently it was like an actual thing that went, you know, the movie, there were parts of this movie that I could barely see.
Yeah. I suffered from the same thing. I know you and I talked offline about this one, but the movie experience in terms of the way it was played on the projector was not good. I think for me, what I was experiencing was, and I think this is for most people actually, was a lot of darker scenes, and the sharpness was not as good as it should have been. So you're just kind of, everything kind of looked fuzzy.
Yeah. I mean, apparently the cinematographer specializes in like this low light cinematography, which I guess is a technique that works in some way, but there are a lot of theaters that I guess haven't gotten their projectors up to par to really work with that concept.
Right.
So like for me, especially early on, I mean, there were scenes that were very, very dark. You could barely make out the faces. And it kind of threw me. And then now all of a sudden I'm reading these articles about how it really was the way the film was shot. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. So, you know, that hurt too. That hurt my experience having to really kind of focus on trying to see what was happening early on. It got better towards the end, mainly because things were a little bit brighter. But, you know, one thing too that I didn't enjoy nearly as much as I thought I would. And as much as a lot of people did, was even the Lando character. I loved Donald Glover's performance. Don't get me wrong. He did an amazing job of channeling sort of Billy Dee Williams, right? And the Lando that we met in Empire Strikes Back in Cloud City. I couldn't help but feel like his character, as far as in the context of this movie, felt like almost an extended fan service. I didn't feel like there was much to the Lando character. Like, after all the hype and all, like, the cool, like, the visuals and the poster, and he looked really cool in the trailers, and I was like, wow, this is going to be the best thing in the movie. And to a point, it was. But I didn't even, like, he didn't have a very large role. point. I mean, relative to the plot, I mean, screen time aside, like, he didn't have a very large role in the movie, and by the end, he's not even a factor, really, except for the very end, obviously, when they do the Han gets the Falcon scene. So that was almost a little disappointing to me. Now, one of the things I didn't know going into the movie was that this was potentially planned as a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So not knowing that, like, some of these things I thought were weird. Like, so the Lando thing I thought was a little weird. It's like, wow, that's kind of what they did with him. That wasn't much. And right. And even the Darth Maul reveal at the end, that kind of went flat for me because I didn't realize that this thing was potentially going to be a trilogy. So I looked at that as just sort of like, oh, okay, that's Darth Maul. And I love the Darth Maul character post Phantom Menace.
Right.
But it didn't really resonate much with me either because I felt like, well, where's that going? And I think it would have confused a lot of people. Like, nobody in my theater reacted, and I'm assuming it was probably because it's a lot of movie fans. So right. Now we're going back to that conversation from last episode about, you know, fans of the movies only versus fans of, like, all things Star Wars. And that was, you know, Darth Maul is one of those things where it's like, if you are a fan of just the movies, you're probably like, wait, what?
Wait, but so that part I don't understand because so for me, I saw a huge reaction from people when Maul was revealed because they're like, holy cow, like, this dude is still alive. Like, you know, for me, as a consumer of all things Star Wars, i.e. Rebels and the Clone Wars, I knew he had been around. It was still a shock for me because I didn't expect to see him back in the movies and see the cinematic version of Maul. But I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't see it coming at all. But when it did happen, there were definitely some gasps in my theater. So my experience was completely different. I had a huge turnout for the movie on a Wednesday night. Wait, did I say no? Wednesday night I saw it. And it was, you know, people were super excited. And there were lots of laughs and you know, people had a really good time watching the movie. Now, for me, I kind of came into it as very similar to you, low expectations. We obviously have been following things behind the scenes, so I'm expecting to see a Justice League like film where, you know, bits and pieces of this kind of, you can tell that you can almost feel, you know, that this is Lord and Miller's and this is Ron Howard's pieces of work, but ultimately it didn't end up that way. I thought it was a great movie, and obviously we've heard that, you know, Ron Howard had to refilm, you know, upwards of 70% of the movie, which is just like, holy cow, that's what a task for that man, and kudos to him for pulling it off. But you know, I had a completely different reaction. But again, similar to you, I wasn't going into this saying, okay, I need to know the stories of, you know, the previous stories of Han and how he met Chewbacca and how he met Lando and how he got the Falcon. All I didn't care about that either. But the way it was executed was, I was pleasantly surprised by it. I mean, of course, there were really no surprises other than, I'd say, the Kessel Run, because I didn't know what, you know, nobody really knows what the Kessel Run was, other than it was completed in under 12, in 12 parsecs. So it's like, how are they going to pull that off? And for that sequence in the movie, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was a lot of fun. I know some other folks have commented on their podcast and on Twitter and on various websites that you finally get to see somebody pilot the Millennium Falcon, and that's what I truly enjoyed. I got, you know, you get to see Han and his element really be a pilot. But you know, I think that was the most exciting part of this for me, because, and it made me think back on all of the other moments we see Han in the cockpit, right? They're really quick sequences of him piloting the ship. And I went back to Empire Strikes Back, and I'm like, okay, the scene where he's navigating through the asteroid field is probably as close as we get to that bit that we've seen in Solo, because part of it, he's trying to fix the Falcon while Leia and Chewbacca are helping get away from the Empire. So I thought that was cool, and it was really good to see. I didn't really care. I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't really care for the whole love connection with Kira. I just thought that was
That's one thing we're definitely going to agree on. That love story just was not convincing to me.
The thing is too, I didn't really feel like the actors had much chemistry. Now, right. I'll be honest, like, was it Emilia Clarke? I'm not really a big fan of her. I've seen bits and pieces of her on Game of Thrones, but I was not happy with her in Terminator Genesis and some of the other bodies of work that she's done. But in Solo, I thought she was decent.
She definitely was. The story itself, though, just the way it starts off, they kind of start off and they're just like young kids in love already. So you don't really get a chance to sort of invest in like their relationship because it's they're already in the middle of it. Like when you see them for the first time and then they're separated.
Yeah.
And then like this time goes by and then, you know, then they reunite. But because of the fact that we didn't spend a lot of time with them to see that relationship evolve and develop, it's like we see them for a brief moment. They're happy. They're kissing. They're giddy. They're seemingly in love. And then she's gone. And then all of a sudden one day they're reunited and it's, oh, okay. Like we're supposed to, I guess this is supposed to be a big moment and a big turning point, but it didn't come across that way.
Right.
Just because we didn't spend time with
them. There was no weight to their relationship.
No,
not at all. I mean, his reaction and his wish to want to get back to her was not compelling enough for me. But other than that, I thought the other characters that they built around Han were great. Like Woody Harrelson's character of Beckett, I thought was a very interesting and multidimensional character. I mean, obviously there are lots of twists and turns with whose side is he in and how they kind of flip the tables there. I thought was good and interesting. I really enjoyed the way that Han meets Chewie. And I was very caught by surprise with him speaking. I don't want to say Wookiee because that's not what the language is. Right. I know that there's
for lack of a better term, you can say Wookiee. He spoke Wookiee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I thought that was hilarious. And, of course, yeah, sure, he speaks Wookiee. That's really cool. So I dug that. I dug all of those little folds in the character. And I really think it enriches the experience of watching, you know, episode 4 and 5 and 6. I just think that there's some interesting things that they did with the character. I mean, he is still ultimately Han Solo, and I thought Alden did a great job at bringing that character to life in his own way and still feeling like he's connected to Harrison Ford's portrayal of Han Solo. I thought Lando was fine too. I agree with you to some extent that a lot of the hype was just that hype. I mean, yeah, he, you know, Donald Glover brilliantly portrayed a version of, you know, Billy Dee Williams' Lando, and the voice was like spot on. And but yeah, the interesting thing is that he has sex with robots, which I thought was hilarious.
He is pansexual.
Yeah. Wow, they really did bring that one to life. They brought that one full circle.
And I had heard about that, where the direction they had gone with the character ahead of time. But, you know, just quickly talk about Alden for a second, because obviously we really have to. We can't talk about this movie without talking about it. So you felt that he was good as Han Solo and that he brought the character home for you. So with me, I did not dislike him as much as I feared I would. I don't want to say as much as I thought I would. Say as much as I feared I would. Although I did have a disconnect. Like, I'm not going to lie. If I'm being completely honest, there was a bit of a disconnect with me there, just really trying hard to convince myself that that was like the Han Solo that I knew and loved watching it. In fact, when in the scene where he does meet Chewie, when you first see like the feet kind of stomping in right. the darkness, my first instinct was, oh, wait, that's right. Like, this is Han Solo. Like, this is Han Solo and Chewbacca. Like, I actually heard myself saying that, like, in my head, like, oh, mm-hmm. that's right. So, like, he didn't quite connect with me as far as being Han Solo. I think he's a good actor.
Right.
I think he lacked a little bit of charisma that I think,
okay.
or swagger, or maybe, or something that was just a little off. He seemed more, I mentioned Farscape earlier in the show, but he seemed to me almost like more like a channeling, like a John Crichton from that show. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not, those things aren't necessarily negatives for me. Like, that didn't take me out of the movie. That didn't have an effect. I thought he was fine. I didn't have a big issue with him. But one thing that I think I do want to say, as far as the directing, because we did talk, you did talk about that, and how, you know, people were, they knew a lot. Some people knew a lot about all the things that had gone on behind the scenes. This is by no means a Justice League situation.
No, this is a competently
made film, as from a direction standpoint. I had issues mostly with the plot. I felt like the plot was barely there. If you really look about what this movie is about, if you really think about it, it's kind of not really about anything in particular. It's just sort of a series of events. And I felt like one thing I don't agree with, in the sense of, like, you talk about the surprises and the twists and turns with, like, the Woody Harrelson character. Mm-hmm. I felt like some of those things were telegraphed. Like, I felt like by the end of that movie, I knew kind of that Woody Harrelson was going to end up the way he ended up. And I thought that Emilia Clarke's character really telegraphed a lot of her stuff, too.
Yeah, they definitely hinted that there was more to meets the eye. With her, and that, you know, she had in some ways been tainted and her allegiances were to somebody else. I didn't think, though, again, that it was to a higher power, and that higher power being Darth Maul.
I don't think any. Yeah, I mean, that definitely was going to be a big surprise.
That really legit caught me with my pants down.
Yes.
My mouth was open.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't. You know, my mouth wasn't like open, but I was like, wow, that, yeah, definitely didn't see that coming. And as a big fan of the Darth Maul character, I would love to see him, you know, truly introduced in some of these, like, Star Wars stories going forward. The only thing is, I think one of the things that might have affected my, that scene having impact on me, was by the time I saw it on the Sunday of opening weekend, I had already seen the box office estimates for the weekend. So I knew the movie hadn't done well. So I assumed that the chances of a sequel were going to be slim. So like, having that, seeing that, that Darth Maul moment at the end, it was like, all right, well, that's not something that we're really going to get expanded on, unless they do, you know, throw him into, you know, another movie. I mean, they certainly could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know that there's speculation about him popping up in an Obi-Wan movie and all that good stuff. For me, you know, while the surprise, well, the appearance of Maul was a surprise, I wasn't thinking at all about the, you know, potential for trilogies and other, you know, stories, Han Solo stories and Maul carrying through there, because I was ultimately I sort of ended up with disappointment on my tongue and on the palate, because I know his ending. I know where he goes.
Well, right. Yeah. And you know I do mean? As
so,
well.
So
yeah.
For me, I'm like, that's nice, but he's going to die.
Yeah, although
you know what I mean? I'm like,
I go back to Rogue One, though, in the sense that, I mean, I knew they were all basically going to die, and it didn't affect. I still invested in them, and I was still excited for it, because, you know, sometimes it is about the journey.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, you haven't watched Rebels, right?
I did. I love Rebels.
Okay, so, but he has such a presence in the Rebels storyline.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That it's kind of like, well, how much more can you tell? So he, you know, in the Clone Wars series, he takes over Death Watch, and somewhere in between there, he ends up on Malachor, which is where he asks, Dorthamir, his homeworld, and that's where he calls Kira, right? And then somewhere in between, you know, this point here in the movie and where we first see him meet Ezra Bridger, that's like 10 years, I think, from what I've read before. I think that's a 10-year gap in time. I'm not really invested in the character anymore, to be honest with you, of Maul. I'm not. Because I know where he ends up. I know what his motivations are, and his you know, the things that are ultimately driving him is his hatred of Obi-Wan Kenobi. So it's kind of like, okay, that was nice, cute, let's move on.
Well, that was my other thought with Darth Maul being the big sort of reveal at the end, was like, okay, is Darth Maul in the Han Solo sort of, I mean, I know it's all one universe, but in the context of these movies, Darth Maul being like a big foil for like Han Solo is not, that,
no.
I mean, we know, like you just said, we know that that's not the end game. And we also know that that's not really an ideal matchup.
Right.
So, like, Where was that heading? So I think for you, it seems like that moment kind of wound up just being more of a bit of fan service than anything that you really thought, wow, I can't wait to see this in another movie.
My best metaphor is, like, I don't really like the cherries on top of sundaes, but if there isn't a cherry on top of my sundae, it's not really a sundae, if that makes any sense.
Got
so
it.
It's like I'm enjoying my sundae and that cherry is nice to look at, but I'm not eating it and I don't really care for it, and it's not going to do anything to how I, you know, enjoy the sundae. So, you know, for me, it was a nice moment. It's a throwaway moment for me, to be honest. When I initially saw a character sitting there with a hood up, I thought, holy shit, this is the Emperor. And I got really, really excited about the Emperor being, you know, because at this point too, he's also pulling many, many strings behind the scenes, and to have him controlling some sort of underground syndicate would have been amazing to me. And I thought, this is really cool. And then I'm kind of like going back into my mind of like, did Ian McDiarmid film any scenes recently? Like, has that been hinted at? Were there any rumors? And then for it to be Maul, I was like, yeah, cool. But damn, it would have been better if it was the Emperor.
Yeah. And I mean, because also at this, and I think I'm right on this, at this stage of the game, I mean, Darth Maul is not working like really for the Emperor.
No, because in Clone Wars, he attacks the Emperor for abandoning him, and the Emperor basically beats his ass.
Right. So he's kind of like
he's on his own.
Yeah, he's no like a gangster, you know, on his a mob boss, basically, like on his own at this point. So there's not even really a connection there. So, yeah, I do think the Emperor would have been a better thing. I don't know that it would have provided that same, like, oh, really, like, type of moment. Right. And who knows? Again, we don't know what the plans were for another movie, you know, where this thing was really truly going to be headed. So, you know, who knows where that was going to lead? Maybe he was just going to be a presence like that. And you know, the villains were just going to be kind of working around him. You know, that could possibly be. So who knows? I don't really know where they were, you know, what the plans were for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, fine for what it is. I mean, again, they've basically, you know, doubled down on his appearance in, you know, the cinematic universe, and I'm sure there are many, many fans that are super excited about the prospect of having Maul pop up in another, you know, Star Wars story, or at least mentioned or something to that degree, because up until this point he's just been a ghost.
Right.
So we'll see.
I think for the most part, it seems like there are certain things that we agree on as far as the movie goes. And, you know, really the one thing that we don't, mainly, aside from some of the nitpicky things, as far as how much that was a negative for you, is the fact that you had fun with it and I didn't. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, I went into it with, okay, you know, bar is set super low, and you know, I was expecting a shit show, to be honest with you, to some degree. But I didn't, you know, when I walked out of the theater, I was like pleasantly surprised. I walked out with like a little, you know, hop, skip and a jump, like, wow, that wasn't bad. That was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I thought it enriched the character and enriched the other movies. And I didn't feel like they, you know, different from your opinion here, but I didn't think they played the fan service hand too hard. That, you know, if I were comparing it to Rogue One, I mean, they were just direct callbacks to characters in the movie. Like, I half expected to see a forced push, not the force, but a force cameo of C-3PO and R2-D2 in some capacity. I didn't get that. Fine. Great. I was waiting to see if they were going to kind of trip up and start talking about the force and get Han Solo thinking about that, because then I'd be like, oh, continuity is broken, and we all know how I am with continuity, right? At least those that follow me on Twitter. And you know, there were things like that. I almost half expected him to bump into Jyn Erso, and you know what I mean? Like,
there were, yeah. So I wasn't that, expecting that type of stuff, but
to me, that is ultimate fan service. That's like a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, like the shoot first thing, I guess.
That would have been real. Well, that to me, him running into Jyn Erso, that would have been real. Like, that's hardcore fan service right there.
What got me excited was seeing some characters from Rogue One pop up, or I don't know if it's the same character, but I heard they're like sackmates. So the Two Tubes, right?
Okay.
He pops up in Rogue One. He's part of what's his name? Saw Gerrera's crew.
Right.
And his sackmate, and I forgot his name, is the one that pops, is in the one that's in Solo. So seeing that was like a nice little nudge for me. I was like, ah, that's cool. You know, they're kind of going back, and they're going to Rogue One, and then they're going to the OT. You know, the whole thing with L3 being part of the Falcon, I thought was amazing. I thought it was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Like, and I've been talking about that on Twitter, like, at least once a day. At least I try to, because I think that was a nice little, you know, wink to the fans. You know, specifically when you go back and you watch the original trilogy and C-3PO is talking about the strange dialect that the Falcon has, and Han's references to "I need you to talk to the Falcon," or she, you know, referring to her as a she.
Right.
All of that, I appreciate what they were doing in Solo and kind of building that. I thought it was thoughtful. And it wasn't forced fan service like, who was it? I think it was Jyn bumping into those two guys from the cantina.
Yeah, see, that type of fan service doesn't bother me, though, in the sense, because I feel like that is, it's not integral to the plot, and it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, if you really know your stuff, then that you're going to get a little kick out of that. But yeah, it doesn't ruin or take over the scene or add necessarily much to it, but it's just kind of there. That's actually how I prefer my fan service to be, mm-hmm. kind of. The thing about L3, though, and I actually, to be honest with you, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that at the time, but I actually was not crazy about L3. I didn't particularly like the character. Mm. Now, you just gave me a whole new sort of appreciation for how the character ends up. Right. So that will stay with me. But the character itself, I was not a huge fan of. And I think it ties into the fact that I think that goes more towards the plot and the writing and the fact that these characters just were not particularly vivid and memorable to me.
You know what the interesting thing is about characters like L3 is that they continue to expand on this universe, right? So we're being introduced to these new characters that have these different personalities. And then you think about, at least this is how I go about it in my mind, is I go back to the other movies and I'm thinking, like, I don't ever remember seeing a droid like you in, you know, the original trilogy, ever. And I did the same thing with K2SO. In Rogue One,
which is a character that I absolutely loved, by the way.
Right, a brilliant character, well written, and you know, the performance by Tudyk is top notch.
Yep.
But you know, that's kind of like where I go to. I'm like, oh, let me use my, you know, virtual sort of Star Wars encyclopedia built in my brain and go, I don't ever remember seeing a character, and then I have to remind myself, like, these movies give us but the smallest glimpse of a galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, is the story being told by five characters.
Right.
That's it.
And I think even in A New Hope, like, I mean, just, you know, when Luke acquires C-3PO and R2-D2, like, I mean, it's implied that there's like a lot of different droids. There's different types of droids, yeah, serve different functions. So I never really had a big issue with it. I mean, yeah, visually it's like, okay, I've never seen anything like you before, but it was never out of my mind that like, okay, these couldn't exist. Yeah. You know, we just, like you said, haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing too is a lot of, again, this is an obstacle, a challenge for Star Wars, for the Star Wars franchise at large, is that for somebody like me, again, who consumes everything related to Star Wars, books, TV shows, I don't do the comic books. There's just too many damn comic books and I can't read them. But the persona of L3 and her like droid uprising and all of that, like droid rights, is hilarious to me because it's referenced in a book. Because in a Luke Skywalker book, they talk about droid revolutions and like droids want rights and all of that stuff. So I'm kind of like, oh, that's a nice little nod. But for somebody else who is new to this, right, who is new to this expansion of a droid character, you're like, gosh, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And it's just us, you know, winking at today's society with our social justice warriors and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So I can understand how some folks could get turned off by that. For me, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's part of canon because it's mentioned in a book and not really the way I would have expected it to show up, but I understand now that there is a character who is championing for all of that good stuff. So
yeah, there's been a, I think one of the themes about the prequels, I mean, about the Star Wars stories, right, and these new entries under this regime of Lucasfilm, is that they've been, I think, interestingly or oddly, depending on how you look at it, selective with some of the things that they've chosen to incorporate from either previous canon or current canon or, you know, whatever, yeah, the past, and certain, they've taken certain things from books and from other things that, you know, or they've reworked certain things. And it is kind of interesting to see how they've done that. And it'd be fascinating to see how that process actually works.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely mining a lot from the, what was the extended universe, now called Legends, and sort of folding it back into canon in new and unique, right, ways. I mean, Thrawn is a great example of that. And his character is awesome. And he's almost, I mean, I think he's almost exactly the same, but there are some of the things, I mean, you know, if we really want to talk about some of the extended universe stuff, I mean, Luke Skywalker's son was called Ben, and
right,
they, you know, they obviously, so there's sort of a change that,
yeah, reinterpretation or switch, or they took a concept and just applied it somewhere else, basically,
right,
sort of.
Right. So, I mean, that's the, you know, the story, I don't want to say the story group, I forget what they're called, but essentially the story group that is, I think, pulling from the archives and essentially like the Star Wars libraries and sort of folding things into, you know, these new stories and canon, et cetera. So, it's interesting, but, you know, for you, if you were to rank Star Wars among the rest of the library of Star Wars films that we have, where would it sit? And do you consider it to be worse than some of the prequels that we have, like Episode 1, 2, or 3?
Oh, okay. So I'm not a big fan of lumping in the Star Wars stories and trying to kind of compare them with these saga films. Because I do think they are a different thing and that their goal is different. So it almost isn't fair. But let's just say that it's definitely going to be ranked, if I am ranking everything together, after the entire original trilogy, and this is not in any particular order for the moment, right, but after the entire original trilogy and The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and Rogue One, this is under all of those movies for me. So now it really comes down to this versus the prequel trilogy, which is tough. Now, I would probably prefer to watch Solo at least one more time before, right, I, maybe in a different environment where I could see a lot of the stuff that's actually happening on the screen.
4K HDR. Yeah,
and appreciate some of the you know, the cinematography. But I would like to see it again, because I've seen the prequel trilogy so many times that to try to compare a movie you've only seen once to something you've seen a lot. And the prequel trilogy for me brings on a different level of frustration. So Solo doesn't frustrate me, even though I didn't necessarily like the movie and it didn't do much for me as a fan and I didn't have fun with it. You know, you made the analogy earlier in the show with the cherry on the sundae. And I think it's a fascinating analogy, because I happen to love the cherry on top of the sundae, but like you, the cherry doesn't make the sundae necessarily. Whether the sundae's, whether the cherry's on top or not, I'm still going to enjoy the sundae for what it is. And that's very much what Solo is to me in this entire Star Wars franchise. It's, if it was never a thing, it would be fine with me. But since it is a thing, like, it doesn't have a major impact on me. Is it a movie I'm going to be rewatching over and over and over again for years? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Again, who knows when I see it again, and I will see it again at some point, what my thoughts are going to be. But it's not something that I feel like I have to watch in order for this to be complete and in order for me to have this part of the story. So I can still have Star Wars without necessarily incorporating Solo. But with the prequel trilogy, a lot of where my frustration comes from is the fact that there was things in that movie that really, truly frustrated me. But I feel like I have to watch the prequel trilogy in for some instances, because it's like it's such a big part of this now, because it was, you know, whether I agree with the direction that they took or whether I agree with the story that they were telling, it is an important story. You know, I mean, it is as convoluted as they made it. It is the origin of Darth Vader, right? So it's somewhat unavoidable. And there are some great moments that I loved in the prequel trilogy. So I you know, I don't know. I don't know where to rank Solo in with the prequel. I mean, Attack of the Clones is my least favorite Star Wars movie, okay? And I'm not, obviously, I'm not alone in that. So I don't know how to compare Solo to Attack of the Clones. To me, though, they're very different movies trying to accomplish very different things. And I don't even know if it's fair to try to compare Solo to Attack of the Clones or The Phantom Menace. Revenge of the Sith, I think I would put at the top of those. So for me, it's really Solo, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, you know, in no order, while Attack of the Clones at the end. So really, I guess it comes down to Solo and The Phantom Menace. And I, you know, I don't know. I don't know right now where I would even, where I would slot Solo. I can't really slot it, because again, I found it to be mostly disposable in that I don't need it. So it's like, I don't feel like it's a vital part. And I guess in a sense, Rogue One isn't a vital part either, which is why I don't like to compare the Star Wars stories with the saga movies, but I loved Rogue One. So as a movie, as far as what I saw on the screen, I will rank that high, because I loved the experience of it. But at the end of the day, Rogue One is a disposable movie too. I mean, if you don't watch it, it's not really affecting much for you.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt the other movies at any stretch. It's color. It's context. That's essentially what these movies are doing it. And, you know, when we put it in that light, you know, that these two Star Wars movies, the ones that are separate from the saga films, are just extra color. It doesn't really do anything for what people's broader experiences have been for Star Wars. Right. And it feels like it's not necessary, right? They're nice to haves, but they're not must haves. Which is interesting that, I mean, now that we put it in that light, it's like, why would we be making these kind of movies anyways, right? Why are we not trying to do something completely different? Because while we're expanding, you know, quote unquote, expanding the universe, we're still within the same universe, the cinematic universe, for that matter. Like, we're still playing with the same characters that we're familiar with. We're not going beyond, with the exception of Rogue One, right? Because they're new characters, but again, it's a moment of time that's still very, very much connected to Episode 4.
Yep.
Because it's in the crawl, and there are a lot of elements that pop up in Rogue One that directly link specifically Vader and Tarkin, that are directly linked to the saga story. Right.
Yeah.
But we're not telling anything separate from that. And it makes, you know, the thing is, one of the things that I jotted down in my notes about Solo was, this was the first time that the Empire is not the big bad. This is the very first movie where the government is not the big bad.
Right. Right. The pre-empire, or something that would eventually turn into the Empire, or a knockoff of the Empire.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's done with a character that there are no, you know, to him, there are no Jedi, there is no Force. And I wonder, even if, you know, it was Han Solo played by Harrison Ford or some version of that, if the story itself would have even still had legs, because I think the Force and all of that is such an integral part of Star Wars that when you remove it from it, you're essentially taking the lifeblood from the franchise.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that, you know, had Harrison Ford just hypothetically, you know, played Han Solo somehow, right, in this movie, that
he
it would have
Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that. As far as what's on the screen, yeah, I'm going to probably, the character would be more charismatic to me, and obviously it would fit more, you know, it would be, you know, there would be that continuity, and it would be the Han Solo, right, that we meet at Mos Eisley, literally, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I don't know that the story, and I guess this is ultimately my biggest critique of this movie, is I don't know, it doesn't make the story any more compelling, it doesn't make me like, you know, any of these other characters any more or less. And it's still the same sort of faint semblance of a plot, you know, and it's still a movie that just kind of happens for me with things that didn't quite have the impact on me that they had on a lot of other people. And I think that they were designed to have. So, yeah, I don't think Harrison Ford, that's why I'm hesitant to be overly critical of, you know, Alden's performance, because I think he's good. And I don't think the failures of this movie, and I'm not talking about the box office failures, I'm talking about the creative failures of this movie, for me, had anything to do with him. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll get some of the blame and stuff, and sure, it's a little hard for some people to digest the fact that this is Han Solo, this iconic character, but it's not the one they were used to. But there's just not much, really, for me, there wasn't much to sink my teeth into from a plot standpoint. So mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, Harrison Ford Han Solo helps this.
Right.
That
right.
much. Anyway.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it goes back to the necessity of the story.
Yes.
Right.
So like Rogue One was a story we didn't need, but it turned out to be a story that I loved. It was a great story. And when I left the theater after Rogue One, I remember saying, every year, at least once a year, I'm going to watch Rogue One right into A New Hope. Like, that's going to become a regular thing for me.
Yeah.
I don't know that, you know, I leaving the theater, I was like, I'm not, there's not really any interest for me to say, oh, I have to watch Solo now into A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, or Solo into anything, you know, or Solo with Rogue One. Or I just find it's hard to slot this movie now, you know, and you know, with the box office performance, it's most likely we're not going to get a continuation of this little sort of mini younger Han Solo universe, so mm-hmm. it's going to probably make the movie even harder to slot. But I do agree with a lot of the people that are saying that, you know, hopefully this doesn't lead to any, you know, knee-jerk reactions, and you know, hopefully they do stay the course and make understand that there are interesting stories that can be told. You know, it's not just that people don't want to see prequels, because then Rogue One wouldn't have been a success. And it's not that people don't want to see familiar characters. It's not any of that. This was just a very specific thing that happened because it was the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Right. It was a perfect storm of unfortunate events.
So just stay the course, you know, make your Obi-Wan movie if that's in the plans. You know, the Boba Fett movie, maybe that one's a little questionable because there's another character that I don't think has that mainstream appeal.
Right.
Maybe that might not be the best idea.
If I'm being honest with you, like, my appeal for Obi-Wan, I can't believe I'm about to say this, has like dramatically diminished.
Because of Solo or just in general?
Not because of Solo, but because of, like you, I think Solo has forced me to kind of think about what do I really want and need from a Star Wars movie? And I want more of The Last Jedi. I know folks who are listening to us who are not big fans of The Last Jedi are probably turning over and like, oh my God, I'm going to turn these guys off right now. But honestly, like, real talk, I want more of The Last Jedi. I want more of that thought-provoking, like, we're going to turn things on its head. We're going to take risks. We're going to kind of change what you might think this character is or who they've become, all of that stuff. I want to see more of Rey. I want to see more of the Force. I don't want to go back to a gap, you know, a time gap where Obi-Wan essentially we can have a story about Obi-Wan, but ultimately he ends back up in the same place where we first meet him in A New Hope, because that to me doesn't feel like I that's not fulfilling to me.
Right. So basically you're kind of where I am in the sense that, you know, where I want to see the evolution of the franchise and I want to see new characters, you know, doing sort of familiar things. Right. So I want to see the Force. I want to see Jedi, but I want to see this new, and that's where I am now. As far as you want to see more movies like The Last Jedi, I don't necessarily need to see a literal, you know, versions like The Last Jedi, but I want to see, I want to see more of a focus put on new characters that I can kind of fall in love with. There's only going to be one Luke Skywalker, right? There's only going to be one Han Solo in theory. There's only going to be one Princess Leia. These are kind of, you know, once in a lifetime characters. They've been there. They've been in amazing movies that we can still enjoy and still love and that still hold up today. Now I want to see something new.
Right, the next generation.
Yeah, and that's where I am as a fan, and that's, so now we've kind of gone back to the very beginning of this show where I mentioned that I think my biggest issue with Solo was just the fact that as a fan, I'm ready for Star Wars to be something new and exciting. I'm ready for the unfamiliar elements of The Force Awakens, and I'm ready for a continuation of The Last Jedi. And I loved Rogue One, so, and that was, like, again, that was a prequel with a lot of unfamiliar. So I want to see more unfamiliar. I want to see familiar themes, but with unfamiliar characters and in unfamiliar places, and let's, you know, let's go forward with this thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's just so much for them to build off of and to expand. I don't need us to go back into time and add more color, like I was saying, to Boba Fett. I don't need that. I don't need more color for Obi-Wan. I want to see more of, you know, the development and growth of the Force. And I want to see new Force powers. And I want to see all of that good stuff. You know, I want to see an underground and you know, the underground syndicate and how people are the crime, you know, the way that the crime lords are running. Maybe it's a Hutt movie. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, but
yeah,
something completely
I'm with you.
Different than, well, we're just going to take this character that you've heard of or seen, you know, in some of these movies, and we're just going to tell you what his backstory is, because I don't really care about that stuff.
Yeah, and maybe go back to the original concept of world building, where you know, you can create these saga trilogies rather than have a movie every year having to tell us and show us things, these little corners of these worlds. Let's see new worlds being built. You know, yeah. Let's get back to that and let's use that as our quantity. You know, I'd rather have a great Star Wars saga film, you know, every couple of years than a movie every year. And one of them is something that I don't necessarily have to see or want to see. I don't necessarily want to have to be in that position. It's going to be the position I think we're going to be in. But yeah, I'm with you. Let's start building some new worlds, whether they're big or small or otherwise, rather than kind of revisiting and having to check off the boxes so that we can see things that we've heard about for years that, you know.
Right. We've already imagined how it transpired, right? I mean, that's the thing, right? The Solo has to compete with your own imagination. And nothing ever beats that. So
we're going to put Star Wars to rest for a little while.
For a long time.
We've spoken a lot about it in the last couple of episodes, and we will move on to some other things going forward. There's been some exciting developments lately that we can sink our teeth into. By the time we record the next episode, we will have gotten the Halloween trailer, which I'm incredibly excited about. That is a favorite franchise of mine, or one of them anyway. So I'll be very excited about that. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in the next show. And so thank you for everybody who's listened, who's downloaded, who's reviewed. You know, who's already supported us early on in this podcast. We greatly appreciate it, and we hope you continue on with us going forward. So
absolutely. Yeah, and guys, like, it means so much to us that you guys spend the time listening to us go back and forth, and have been sharing your feedback and also engaging with us, you know, across the social platforms and promoting us. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We do truly appreciate it, and certainly promise that there is always more to come. There are a plethora. I'm gonna make sure I say plethora like every episode. maybe we'll do a Three Amigos breakdown, but you know, we have a plethora of topics that I know that Chris and I are constantly weighing to talk about. So you know, keep on listening, stay tuned, and again, you know, thanks for being a fan. We've got a lot of stuff up our sleeves. So if there's stuff that you ultimately want to hear or you think is super relevant to, you know, the format of our show, please leave us your suggestions. We promise you there is no such thing as a dumb idea or a dumb suggestion. So please get at us if you want us to talk about something, or if you have a question, we'll certainly take those and answer them before we dive in or even incorporate it into our topics and discussion points. So,
All right.
That's it.
So we'll talk to you next week, and thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at RealCAlmighty and Aaron at Starting Sith. The show is at The Fanboy Garage, and the network is at Revenge OT Fans.